Greetings, and welcome to the Industrial Alliance third quarter earnings results conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded on Wednesday, November 9, 2022. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Marie-Annick Bonneau, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon and welcome to our 2022 third quarter conference call. All our Q3 documents, including press release, slides for this conference call, MD&A, and supplementary information package are posted in the Investor Relations section of our website at ia.ca. This conference call is open to the financial community, the media, and the public. I remind you that the question period is reserved for financial analysts. A recording of this call will be available for 1 week starting this evening. The archive webcast will be available for 90 days, and a transcript will be available on our website in the next week. I draw your attention to the information on forward-looking statements on slide 2 and on non-IFRS and additional financial measures on slide 3. Also, please note that the detailed discussion of the company's risk is provided in our 2021 MD&A, available on SEDAR and on our website. I will now turn the call over to Denis Ricard, President and CEO.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call today. As usual, I will start by introducing everyone attending on behalf of IE. First, Jacques Potvin, Chief Actuary and CFO. Mike Stickney, Chief Growth Officer and responsible, among other things, for our U.S. operations. Alain Bergeron, Chief Investment Officer. René Laflamme, in charge of individual insurance and annuities. Sean O'Brien, responsible for our mutual fund business and wealth management distribution affiliates. And Éric Jobin, responsible for our group businesses. We reported good Q3 results this morning, as illustrated by the key metrics on slide 7. Core ROE of 13.8% is well within guidance, and core EPS of $2.29 is 3% higher than last year, and only 1 cent shy of Q3 guidance. These results are quite good, especially in the light of the lower financial markets that are affecting the wealth management businesses. During the quarter, sales momentum continued in most business units, particularly in individual insurance. Also, our individual wealth management sector posted net fund entries, a noteworthy performance given the current challenging environment for this industry. Our capital position remains robust and stable at 130%. In addition to our sound and prudent management approach, a key factor in the stability of our solvency ratio is our steady and strong organic capital generation, which amounted to approximately $160 million in the third quarter. Our financial strength provides a solid foundation for the further execution of our growth strategy. To support our future sustained growth, we must evolve with the changing environment. With this in mind, a few years ago, we began a transformation project with an important digital focus. The experience of our clients, employees, and advisors is at the heart of this transformation, which will enhance business growth, client experience, and efficiency. In carrying out this transformation, we are progressing with both business development and back office optimization initiatives, ensuring that we prioritize based on the value created and remain focused on proper execution. In addition, in order to provide employees with a state-of-the-art experience based on a flexible approach to the workplace, we have, over the past few months, redesigned our offices to create an environment with improved technology that encourages collaboration and contributes to an engaging and productive employee experience. Our innovative approach and redesigned work environments are a definite advantage in attracting and retaining talent. I will conclude with a few comments on the share buyback program. When it comes to capital deployment, we prioritize IA's growth, both organically and through acquisitions, but recognize that buying back shares opportunistically is an effective way to increase value to our shareholders. Therefore, we announced this morning the replacement of our current NCIB program with a new program that would allow us to buy back up to an additional 5% of shares through November 13, 2023. This ends my remarks. I will turn it over to Mike, who will comment on business growth. Following Mike, Jacques will provide more information about Q3 results and our capital strength. Mike?
Thank you, Denny, and good afternoon, everyone. Our solid relationships with distributors are an important success factor for business growth. This distinctive strength is even more valuable in times of economic volatility and is a key reason for our continued growth momentum in the third quarter. In particular, individual insurance sales remain very strong, and we recorded positive net sales in individual wealth management. Now, please refer to slide 10, as I will comment on business growth during the third quarter. Premiums and deposits amounted to $3.3 billion in Q3 compared to $4.1 billion a year earlier. The unfavorable variation is due to the individual wealth management and group pension sectors, as the wealth industry is facing a challenging macroeconomic environment. All other lines of business recorded a respectable year-over-year increase. As at September 30, 2022, assets under management and administration of $196 billion compared to $214 billion last year were also adversely impacted by market volatility and rising interest rates. Third quarter individual insurance sales totaled $93 million, an increase of 37% over last year. With these strong results, according to the latest industry data, IA remains the leader in terms of the number of individual insurance policies issued in Canada. Once again, this quarter, growth was driven by the strength of all of our distribution networks, our high-performance digital tools, and our broad range of products, including our PAR products. We also observed an increase in average premium per policy sold over the same period last year. Moving to slide 11, where I will comment on individual wealth management. The company continued to rank first in Canada for gross and net segregated fund sales, reinforcing its leadership position in the industry. Gross sales totaled $782 million and net fund inflows of $344 million were recorded despite a difficult macroeconomic environment for the industry. Mutual fund results of the third quarter were also impacted by market conditions, with gross sales of $306 million and net outflows of $171 million. Lastly, sales of guaranteed products amounted to $326 million, up 52% year-over-year, as customers tend to turn to cash equivalent products when markets are volatile. For group savings and retirement, Q3 sales were also hampered by the macroeconomic environment and totaled $482 million compared to $810 million last year. Turning to slide 12 for group insurance results, in the employee plans division, premiums were up by 11% compared to the third quarter last year due to good retention of in-force business. While vehicle inventories continued to be low, Dealer Services Canada sales of $301 million were in line with last year's level. Of note, sales of P&C products were up 17% year over year. In the special markets division, the recovery in travel insurance sales led to 60% growth over the same period last year. At IA Auto and Home, our P&C affiliate, direct written premiums registered an increase of 5% year over year. Going to slide 13 for our U.S. operations, sales in the individual insurance division amounted to $35 million U.S. and were up 3% year over year, mainly from growth in the family markets. In our U.S. dealer division, sales amounted to $261 million U.S. compared to $295 million U.S. for the same period last year. This result is primarily due to low retail sales of new and used cars, which both continue to decline year over year, especially for retail used cars. Overall, we are pleased with the sales results for Q3, which demonstrate once again the robustness of our business model. I will now turn it over to Jacques to comment on earnings, capital strength, and IFRS 17 outlook.
Thank you, Mike, and good afternoon, everyone. Today, we are reporting good third quarter results despite a challenging market environment for the wealth management businesses and adverse weather conditions impacting IA Auto and Home. Starting with slide 15, core ROE is around mid-target and core EPS is near the guidance range for the quarter. On a year-to-date basis, core EPS is well within guidance. All other metrics are in line with or better than guidance. Given this result and the impact of the low market level on 12 business profitability, we expect core EPS to be within guidance for the year, most likely in the lower half of the target range. For the same reason, we expect Q4 core EPS to be around the low end of the quarterly guidance. Slide 16 reconciles core earnings with reported earnings. Non-core items adjusted from Q3 reported earnings include the usual adjustments for market, acquisition, and the pension plan. In addition, three items are noteworthy this quarter, namely, the impact of a reinsurance agreement in the U.S., the book value adjustment of software premises and furnishing, and the impact of IASB decision relating to cloud computing arrangement for the first half of the year. The combined impact of these three items is a 5-cent non-core gain. As a result, Q3 core EPS is just 1 cent short of guidance. Slide 17 presents the sources of earnings for the third quarter on a core basis. Core expected profit grew at 2% year-over-year. Growth at 2% year-over-year was held back by lower markets as expected profit on in-force for wealth and group pension declined significantly. Our three other sectors, individual insurance, group insurance, and U.S. operation, together recorded a significant core expected profit on in-force growth of 13%. Unfavorable core experience, mainly due to the collateral impacts of the macro environment, was more than offset by favorable impact of new business, which factors into the calculation a portion of the interest rate that has occurred since the beginning of the year. Higher sales than expected also contribute to this gain on new business. Income on capital was below expectation due to the lower revenues from IA Auto and Home, which experienced severe weather events, and to a lesser extent, a higher volume of vehicle thefts. Finally, the tax charge was lower than expected due to a higher proportion of capital gains. As shown on slide 18, additional mortality claims were again this quarter lower than the excess mortality protection available, and the additional protection for policyholder behavior remained intact. As a result, this additional protection in the reserve totaled nearly $50 million at the end of the third quarter. Our solvency ratio, presented on slide 19, is comfortably above our target range at 130%, which speaks to the strength of our capital position. This ratio benefits from our continued strong organic capital generation, which totaled $160 million in the third quarter. It was also increased by the impact of the reinsurance treaty in the U.S. Indeed, we took advantage of a competitive reinsurance environment to sign a new treaty that not only generated a significant gain in Q3, but also led to a reduction in risk, resulting in a 1 percentage point increase in the solvency ratio. Moving to slide 20, which shows our leverage ratio of 23.4% and potential capital available for deployment of $450 million. As a reminder, the latter will be favorably impacted by the transition to the new accounting regime. As such, our flexible capital position allow us to redeem and cancel 1.1 million shares during the third quarter as part of the NCIB program. As we approach the end of the year, I would like to make two additional comments. First, the annual review of actual assumption has begun and will be finalized in the coming weeks. As of today, we expect the impact of this exercise on the fourth quarter result to be near neutral. Second, moving to slide 21, as we continue to prepare for the implementation of the new accounting regime, we still expect the impacts at transition to range from near neutral to very favorable for IA. In addition, based on our most recent estimates, our preliminary expectation is for near neutral to slightly negative impact on book value as September 30th. As for the solvency ratio as at September 30th, we expect that it will be at least 20 percentage points higher under IFRS 9-17 than under IFRS 4. Given the very strong macroeconomic variation in 2022, these preliminary estimates appear positive. We are particularly pleased with our capital position, for which the outlook remains stable despite this high macro volatility. To conclude my remarks, we are pleased with the result for the first 9 months of the year, with core EPS and core ROE well within guidance in a context where market fluctuation weighed heavily on the wealth management sectors. Moreover, sustained organic capital generation and favorable reinsurance agreement in the U.S. have both contributed to our continued strong financial position. Operator, we will now take questions.
Thank you. If you would like to register a question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from Doug Young with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Hi, good afternoon. First question for Denis or for Jacques. Yeah, we've had several quarters, I would say, miscellaneous, right down to software, technology, and now to office space. I guess my question is, and I get that you're going through an evolution on technology and, you know, work from home and all this stuff. Are we done with the write-downs, or is there more that we should expect in future periods? And if you have a two-second explanation on the IASB impact, that might be helpful as well.
Hello, Doug, Jacques speaking. About the write-down, are we down? For everything that we know now, for sure we're down, actually. The work from anywhere, like Denis mentioned, we're very pleased with the program we're putting in place. And when we look at software, I cannot say today that, you know, that technology evolves. And at one point in time, we may adjust our strategy down the road. But for the moment, we are very pleased with the decision we've taken, and everything has been recognized. So for me, it's done. It's behind us now. As for IASB, it's really a question of timing. We have to capitalize expenses that we will have amortized when the benefit will be will be present. But the interpretation of IASBs, we have to recognize them sooner than expected. So it's really a question of timing. It doesn't change at all the value, the economic value of the project we're doing. So that's really Doug.
And there's an expense issue, or you quantified an expense hit this quarter and for next quarter, but going into next year, is there incremental expense increases that we should anticipate as a result of this as well?
Yes, actually, expenses will certainly increase more. You remember that at the beginning of the year, we told you that we factor in an increase in expenses because of inflation. For the SaaS, we will adjust for that for sure as well. And for the technology, we continue to ramp up our transformation. So there will be, I would say, for the next few years, because of that timing issue, there will be a little bit more pressure. Like I said, doesn't change the value of the project we're doing. However, we will be under a new regime, IFRS 9-17, and we still continue to guide to an average increase of 10% per annum EPS growth, considering that additional pressure on expenses.
Okay. And it takes me to the IFRS 9-17 impact, and I think you talked about it, Jack, the, you know, the impact on the book value went from neutral to favorable last quarter to neutral to slightly negative this quarter. Can you talk a bit about, I assume it's the macro developments, can you talk a bit about what caused that flip-flop quarter over quarter?
Yeah, actually, you're totally right, Doug, it's really the macro. And when I look at that and I take a step back, it's really, we're, I would say, negatively correlated to increase in short to mid-term interest rate, positively correlated to increase in long-term rate, and positively correlated with market movement. I'm speaking about risk-seeking asset or maybe non-fixed income asset. And here we have quite diversified portfolio, real estate, private placement, etc. So overall, when I look at that, and that's why I said in my allocution that we told the market over the past quarters and years that we will be much more volatile under IFRS 17. But so far, our estimate, when we look at that, I'm very pleased. When you look at the market movement this year, it's impressive that we can still achieve a solvency ratio that stay there and a book value that just slightly, I would say near neutral to slightly negative. So it's really macro-related, and it's bode well for the future.
And then just so I can sneak another one in, Jacques, just the U.S. reinsurance agreement, you know, obviously you're upfronting the profit. I assume this is, if you could talk about the structure of it, but I assume this is on mortality. You know, what are you giving up in future profits from this? And obviously from your comments that you continue to target 10% EPS growth, you're not expecting this to have a negative impact on future profit emergence, but there must be something that you're giving up to upfront that profit with this U.S. So can you talk a bit about the agreement?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I would answer for, I would say for IFRS 4 regime, so just for Q4, if we stay on IFRS 4, actually it's an impact on profit of 1 cent that we can expect a lower profit of 1 cent coming from that. However, when we look at it under IFRS 9-17, it will be built into the CSM, so it won't have necessarily a big effect because it would just be the amortization of expected versus amortization of CSM, so it would be very negligible year in, year out. However, when we look at those kind of opportunity, we have to factor in three elements at play here. There's the future profit we left on the table for sure. But at the same time, there's the view of the reinsurer versus our own view about mortality. And on this one, when we strike deal, it's because the view of the reinsurer is more aggressive than our own view. So we're very pleased with that additional profit that we were not expecting. And also, don't forget, we released capital as well. So the ROE of this transaction was really great for our shareholder.
Great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Gabriel Deschenes with National Bank Financial. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. First question on the non-prime, near-prime, whatever you call it, the auto lending business. I see the loss rate ticked up to 2.6%. That's a trailing 12 figure, so if I try to back into, you know, the in-quarter loss rate, is it in the mid-threes, 3.5% or so, if I just look solely at the quarter?
Oh, Gabriel, on the top of my head, I cannot answer that question, but you're right, saying it's a moving average. It's a 12-month average, yeah.
Well,
bottom line, go ahead, Gabriel.
No, bottom line. That's kind of what I was going to ask.
Bottom line, we're very pleased, actually, with the profitability of that line. And maybe one thing for that line of business that doesn't necessarily show that much, because, and I mentioned it in Q2, when I look at the overall dealer businesses, both U.S., Canada, of course, we're negatively impacted by the sale level of the U.S. It's an admin fee business. It's a fee business in the U.S., and sales are the key there. However, when we look at Canada, the price of used car is really helping. And there were provisions that we have to put into our balance sheet for a litigation that cancel out. But when I remove that provision, the profit of the dealer business for the PNC claim and the profit on IA Auto Finance would have been 3 cents better than expected, which is kind of a natural edge, I would say. So as long as used car values stay high, we will be good. So we'll feel really good with that business.
And do you expect the loss rate to move back to, you know, the 5.5% level that we, you know, saw running pre-COVID? And you know, is that in the foreseeable future?
At one point, maybe, but at the same time, we're optimistic it won't go back there because we improved the risk profile of the underwriting we've taken since the pre-COVID. So we're really optimistic in regard of the fact it will certainly continue to increase, okay, with moving out of the COVID situation. But at the end of the day, it will not go to the 5.
Okay. I got a question from Mike, but before I jump to him, I want to stick with you, Jacques. The write-down related to software, premises, and furnishings, I mean, the premises part, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you're reducing your real estate footprint, you know, unless I'm mistaken there, for obvious reasons. Is this, you know, I think you own most of the real estate that you, you know, in which you have offices, or is this, you know, outside of, you know, Quebec or even Canada, so that it's not your own real estate that you're exiting?
I would say for most of them, we own them, but for some, we don't own them. And the way I see it is like we have new spaces available for rent. Mm-hmm. So this is a real positive. We don't need to invest to develop those spaces. So they are there, and Alain's team will certainly work out to rent them. So it's a positive down the road.
So it's not but it's not a major square footage.
This is not major at all.
Got it. And then, thanks for that. And then for Mike, my question is on the warranty business. Yeah, we're seeing the sales volumes dip. That's probably going to continue. I'm wondering about, you know, something that, you know, the FTC has proposed some legislation to pretty much increase transparency of what customers are paying for when they buy a car. At least that's my read on it. So, you know, there's, you know, does that impact at all your outlook for, you know, warranty sales in addition to, you know, just what's going on generally on the volume side?
Yeah, I don't see that, at least at this point, having a big impact. The FTC, you mentioned, having a big impact on warranty. Their focus tends to be on lending rates and disclosure of all that kind of stuff. You know, it may pull in some, let's say, disclosure on warranty sales as well, but I personally don't see it having a big impact. Right now, as you know, it's the market's soft, you know, it's I think gradually improving. You know, looking ahead, I'm actually optimistic. The OEMs are starting to produce more cars, and we're building up a pretty good pipeline of new accounts. You know, that started this year. It takes a few quarters for them to come on stream, and you know, I guess the other factor is the price of used cars are coming down, so that should help car sales as well. But yeah, it's obviously a tough market.
Well, hopefully, I can finally get my pickup truck. All right, thanks for that.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Scott Chan with Canaccord Genuity. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. Jacques, appreciate the near-term guidance on Q4 regarding core EPS. You know, at this point, could you maybe provide us certain, you know, factors that gives you that, you know, new detail on the low end, like maybe specific issues like strain that should be positive, but on the negative side, maybe expenses, wealth, auto and home, or anything like that?
Thank you, Scott, for the question. I would say that I just mentioned one, which is the provision for litigation, that is a one-off. Also about the experience of IE Auto and Home, the weather condition has been very high during the quarter. Actually, my expectation would be more something in the -3 cents-ish in regard of Q4. That's really what I'm expecting. And after 1 month, actually, month of October, we are -1 cent, so directly in line with what would be my expectation. And some expenses will come from, will be there, will continue to be there. We know experience has softened a little bit. There's some inflation on repair. So that's why we believe it's more reasonable to be in that range than the -9 cents that we have experienced. And also, we're also already active in regard of pricing, where we see that there are issues in regard of profitability of product. And apart from that, from the other line of business, I would say that there are good things, there are other elements. There's always volatility from one quarter to the other in regard of experience. But I don't see additional negative thing coming in Q4 compared to what we have in Q3. So that's really where I'm sitting right now.
Okay, thanks. So maybe for Denis, last quarter I think you suggested that you may provide an updated LICAT targeted ratio post IFRS 17, and just wondering if you kind of thought about that and could offer any new perspective.
You mean the targeted ratio, I mean the minimum or the targeted one?
Yeah, the targeted, like currently 110 to 116, but so if there's anything different that you see.
Yeah, I mean we are in the process right now to review that ratio, and I mean, as I would say, as a principle, if it will depend on the level of volatility, you know, that this will bring volatility of the ratio. So the higher the volatility, the higher the targeted ratio. But so far so good. I mean, the preliminary numbers that we have are such that you know, we might not have to you know, increase it significantly, but we're still in the process of calculating it right now.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Tom MacKinnon with BMO Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Yeah, thanks very much. I think are you still looking for an additional 20 points when you in your solvency ratio when you move to IFRS 17? And I think, Jacques, you had mentioned that that would be an additional $1.4 billion in excess capital. Is that still the case this quarter as well?
Yeah, Tom, Jacques speaking. Yes, it's still the case.
Okay, so the way we would want to look at your, if you have potential capital for deployment now of $450 million, we're talking like, you know, $1.9 billion when we get into IFRS 17. Is that correct?
This is correct.
450 plus 1.4. Okay.
Yeah, this is correct.
Okay, yeah, that does it for me in terms of questions. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Mario Mendonca with TD Securities. Please.
Good afternoon. Jacques, can we go back to your comment about the neutral assumption review in Q4? Just given where rates have moved, I would have expected the IRR charge to be in the hundreds of million range, you know, maybe 350. I haven't updated the math just yet, but Your comment about the assumption review being neutral would suggest that there are other things going in the other direction, and it's hard for me to imagine what could be so significant as to offset the potential IRR charge. Am I misreading what you're suggesting?
Yeah, maybe IRR, hello Mario, by the way, IRR may be a little bit too high with the number you're providing. Yes, actually there's one thing that I mentioned maybe when I was speaking about IFRS 17 in previous quarter. One of the elements for which our transition to IFRS 17 doesn't affect our book value is that we had a very conservative way of provisioning for financial guarantees. So those guarantees were in the money last year a lot because interest rates were so low, but interest rate has increased significantly this year, so those guarantees are out of the money. And this is certainly a good source of financing. And there are a few, couple other elements that are there to help as well. So that's really what's behind it.
Now, Jacques, I understand that. I understand that the company has this protection. But I thought that was a day one adjustment. And I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but the assumption review should be a December 31st balance sheet, and then the IFRS should be a January 1st balance sheet adjustment. How are you getting those two to coincide with each other?
Okay. I would try something, Mario, to make sure I understand well the question. Actually, the comment I made about this exchange were really under the IFRS 4 regime because we have to conclude year-end with IFRS 4. So my comment saying it's a near neutral, it's IFRS 4. And for that, I'm still working with the same way I was working in previous year, except for one big thing. We told you 2022 will be a transition year, so we decided to move right away in Q4 2021 in regard of taking risk on the IRR because it was putting us in a better position to transition for IFRS 9-17. So for that, I'm willing on the economic side of IFRS 4 to recognize some conservatism that we were holding in the past that we will no longer need to hold. As an example, those macro protections will no longer be needed. But we took the decision at the beginning of the year to expose ourselves to IRR. So I felt very comfortable using that margin. It was the decision that we took at the time. When I look at basis change under IFRS 17, those one will be published more in March, April next year, and those one will be consistent with what we're doing under IFRS 4, but they will have different impacts. Some of them will affect CSM, some of them will, I will just use expenses as an example. In IFRS 4, we provisioning for all expenses. Under IFRS 17, we won't provision for unattributable expenses. So there will be few differences. I believe it's too complicated to go over that on the call, though. So we will provide more information about that. But one thing that I can tell you, guide you to, there will be a negative impact on the CSM with the business change under IFRS 17. However, the EPS won't be affected. The EPS growth for 2023 won't be affected.
But, Jacques, can we go back to the question I was originally asking, which is, let me ask this. Is there an IRR charge in Q4 22? Whether it's $300 million or $200 million, is there an IRR charge in Q4 22?
The IRR has been paid for by the protection during the year. So if ever IRR move in such a way that we no longer have provision, yes, they will affect. But for the moment, that's not where we are. So we will completely deplete provision before that. And like I said, I have other margin that would be used as well. So that's why I'm very confident to guide towards a near-neutral approach under IFRS 4.
Okay. Let's flip over, if we could, then to experience. I think you might have been addressing this a little bit. The experience that the company's reported has been sort of volatile lately. Do you expect, and I'm talking about policyholder experience now, I'm not talking about macro items. Under IFRS 17, would you anticipate the policyholder-related experience to be as volatile, or is there an opportunity here to change the way you account for policyholder experience?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And for if we all remember, okay, in the past we had a methodology which was a force-end that were used to eliminate some of that volatility, because we are trying to look at very precise number, line of business by line of business, assumption by assumption, quarter by quarter. And you know what? There will be volatility on that side. So when we manage a company's long-term business, short-term business, but we don't manage micromanage it that way, we look at trends, we look at assumption overall, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that you're right, Mario, you're raising a very good point that it's very difficult to predict quarter by quarter those assumption by assumption. So we need to think about something. It just brings noise.
Okay. Yeah, it's something that probably you should revisit, because it's creating experience volatility that may not be indicative of the underlying performance of the company. Appreciate your time, though. Thank you.
I agree, Mario, with what you said. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Paul Holden with CIBC World Markets. Please proceed.
Hi, thank you. Afternoon. Continuing with IFRS 17, a couple questions myself. So appreciate the answer you gave to Doug on the book value implications and the change from Q2 to Q3. And then just wondering, given that was related to market impacts, what then gives you the confidence that on transition it'll be net neutral, given obviously the market impacts are very difficult to forecast?
Thank you, Paul, for the question. It's because transition is at January 1st, 2022, so it's already behind us. So those calculations have been done. So that's why we're confident with those calculations. They are already behind us. So it's important to recognize that transition doesn't happen at January 1st, 2023. It's 2022.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I misunderstood that transition meant and when you first start reporting the IFRS 17 numbers. Okay. So it may end up being on Q1 23, depending on market conditions at that time. It could be it could look more similar to Q3, i.e. it could be negative near neutral.
Paul, that's why we're providing estimate at this point. Okay, those are estimates, but we're providing some color in regard of our estimate for quarter by quarter, and we follow that. And that's why I think the answer I provided in regard of our exposure to risk, movement negatively correlated to short, mid-term, positively correlated to long-term rate and to market, I believe that's the best way to look at macro-wide the way our result will.
Maybe just the way I look at it, Paul, is that after 9 months of very difficult economic environment, we're still in a very, very good position in terms of the impact of IFRS 17. So I guess it's a testimony of the resilience of our balance sheet.
Understand. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then you'll also be adopting IFRS 9 in 2023, and that will require establishment of some performing credit allowances across your entire portfolio, but including the auto loan book. Maybe you can just kind of give us some thoughts about how you're thinking about establishing that, and if there's some potential for the original establishment of credit allowances to sort of distort earnings numbers in that first quarter. or maybe it's not material enough. Again, just looking for some help there.
That's a pretty good question. For sure that the result we're providing, IFRS 9-17, are all-inclusive, include the impact on that. And we will see how it will evolve, but our estimate for Q3 is very small amount. Actually, it would be something around 5 cents each. The impact, if we would have been, because you've seen, and Gabriel referred to it, the 2.3 to 2.6, so it increased a little bit the unfavorable experience. So we would have had to book a 5 cent for that point, but it's included in the overall view of IFRS 9-17. So it's not that material.
I understand. Okay, that's helpful. And then going back to the experience, I mean, one segment we have seen more consistent experience this year has been on the U.S. operations, but consistently moving the wrong direction. Again, maybe not by a huge amount, but at least, you know, consistently negative. How do you think about that and the potential to update assumptions particular to that business?
Yeah, actually, here, what's really at play is really fee for business, because it's admin fee that we're earning on contract. We are not that exposed to the underwriting risk because we reinsure most of that business. So really, profitability will be linked to return to normal sales when there would be more car available for sale. So that's really the metric behind the U.S. dealer division.
Okay, and the message there is you're not planning to change your sales assumptions, right? That's kind of consistent with that. I think the message Mike said, the outlook is getting incrementally more constructive.
Exactly.
Okay, I understand. All right, that's it from me. Thank you.
Mr. Ricard, there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Good results for this quarter. I think the one thing to keep in mind is our strong capital position, the ability to generate capital generation, $160 million. And we are also continuing on the sales side. We haven't got too many questions on the growth side, maybe a bit, but when you look at it, we're very pleased with where we are in terms of growth, and it's very important for our organization. We are on a growing mode, and we have capital to grow. So thanks a lot for attending this call, and see you next time.
That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation, and ask that you please disconnect your line. Thank you.